Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker, nursing a hangover that only middle age can offer you. True story. Oof. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old graciously. Sharing with you today all the games that we're going to talk about what's coming in with incoming! 4 exclamation marks. We'll hit the crowdfunding vibes with FOMO Mofo, and we'll chat with the voices in my head before giving someone the clap. Welcome back. On with the show. Well, welcome back, clappers. It's been 2 weeks since our regular show format after having some bonus content last week facilitated by the one and only Super Trooper. And I have had a really good couple of weeks of gaming. I've got some old stuff, some new stuff, some great stuff. And we'll kick off. I got to play a game of Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle Earth. This is going back, oh, probably about 10, 11 days. With Super Trooper, he got that game for his birthday last year. I've not played Seven Wonders Duel. I played half a game at PAX in 2023 on the demo table. Thought it was great. Really breezy. I thought it was something that was easy to teach, easy to learn. I don't have a lot to compare it to, but, you know, Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle Earth is a bit of a reskin. It's a retheme. There's a little bit more going on. I won't bogged down too much into the gameplay itself other than to say I think it was great fun. I think it was really quick. I think it was maybe half an hour, including a 5 minute, maybe not even 25 minutes, 5 or 6 minute teach, 20 minute game. Thoroughly enjoyed it. The decision space is really quick. You've got a market of cards that you're drawing from, and they are basically an inverse pyramid from the bottom up, and you pick a card, and you might have to pay for that card with something that you have already in your tableau, and you build as you go. You're set collecting your, and you're also working on a board on the side, which has an area majority. You've got 7 sectors there, and there's a little bit of combat-esque kind of stuff going on between, you know, Sauron's forces and the forces for good. It's very abstracted. You know, you're basically dropping people in, and as people drop in, you're just counting people in and out. Look, fun, easy. Really enjoyed it. Would absolutely play again. You've also got this little track that you sort of, the Nazgul are chasing Sam and Frodo, and if Sam and Frodo get to the mountain, they win, and if the Nazgul catch them, then, you know, the forces for Sauron win. First impressions are great. I think it's not a criticism, it would just be a nice bit. I think it would be just that little bit more thematic and interesting if the victory conditions were maybe a little bit asymmetrical. I don't know how you do it. I'm not a game designer, but I think, you know, and I get you can win if you catch Frodo and Sam as the Nazgul, or Sam and Frodo can win if they get to Mount Doom. But it's kind of the same. You know, you're racing along a track, and if you get to the end of that track, you win. You can also win by completing your set collection, and you can also win with area majority if you get all, you know, presence in all 7 sectors on the map. It's not a complaint. I think it's a really easy thing to teach. I think it's a really fun thing to play. I think the theme is fine. I think it's kind of a very loose theme, but it's great. Great fun. I will play it anytime. That was designed by Antoine Bauza and Bruno Cathala, and art by Vincent Tutre. Published by Repos Productions. Got a game of Spots. Look, I'm not going to talk about Spots in detail. We talk about Spots a lot here because it's a house favorite. It was myself, the Peanut, and the Fox. We were playing a game of Spots after dinner last week. And if you haven't played Spots, you've got to roll dice. You've got to put those dice on some Dalmatians that you have in front of you. And once the Dalmatian cards are, all their spots are filled, you score that card. First to 6 cards wins. We all had 6 cards at one point. It was a very tense finish. The Peanut, who is mad for pusher luck, she loves that kind of stuff. She just kept pushing and pushing and pushing on her turn, and she smashed it. It was a tense finish. We loved it. That's Spots. Spots, you know, are... I will say that, spots you, you choose tricks. There's six tricks on the table, and each of them gives you a certain type of action for your turn. There are a number of preset offerings in the rulebook. You know, they say, well, cluster these six tricks and the or these six tricks, and they're built to have a, you know, a specific sort of balance and outcome. We randomly drew ours, and it was a little bit funky in that it was very hard to do what we wanted to do with those. Still had fun. Our tricks were tricky. Still had fun. Spots by Alex Haig, John Perry, Justin Vickers, art by John Bond, and published by CMYK. We love Spots. Spots is fun. If you haven't played Spots, get Spots. Had another Aeon Trespass day night with Super Trooper. It was a 12-hour marathon. We started at, I don't know, 8:30 in the morning, 9 o'clock, and we finished at 8:30 or 9 at night. It was five primal battles. Oh my lord, I think we're on day 47 out of 80. We have officially unlocked the capability to move on to Cycle 2, which is really cool. So that's great. You know, we can do that anytime we like. I think it's not that we're completionists, but the plot and the writing and the actual sort of the narrative that comes with Aeon Trespass is super interesting. So I don't think there's any way in hell we're going to tap out before we get either very close to perishing or, and I think even if we did, we'd just roll and start Cycle 2. We did have a single day on the timeline. So the way Aeon Trespass works is you're going through timeline days, and on each day certain things happen. And ideally, you're not fighting more than one bad guy on a single day. But I think we had one day where we had to fight three primals back to back to back. It was a total bloodbath. I still can't catch up on bloody mini painting. It's, you know, but we're still breathing. We're still playing. I think tomorrow we're wagging work. We're doing another, it won't be 12 hours because it's school day. You know, we've got the Peanut and Beelzebub Bubbles will be at school. But we'll manage to get 5 or 6 hours in tomorrow, which would be great. And then back to regular work the day after that. I don't think I've ever done this bit, but that's by Marcin Wilnecki. Art by a whole lot of talented peeps, and I know it's published by Into the Unknown. If I could sell a kidney, I would 100% back the next game, which is The 12 Sins of Heracles, which is another great, big, monstrous Greek mythology beast. But alas, I need my kidneys, and I kind of went all in on Enormity, so I will still have Enormity shipping to pay for, and sleeves. If I want to sleeve Enormity, my lord, that is going to be every sleeve in the eastern seaboard of Australia. So we'll see. Watch this space. And then the Peanut and I and the Fox joined us for the first time. We demolished another exit box. Oh, and if you've been following along, you know how much the Peanut and I love an exit box. And we were playing, this time we were playing The Return to the Abandoned Cabin, which is kind of like a part two. You go to, you know, they're all very similar. You're somewhere that you got to get out. This one, when you open the box up, it set up a 3D model of an actual cabin. So rather than it being abstracted in story and cards, it set up a 3D model of a cabin. There were actual 3D little boxes that popped into the cabin that you had to hack your way into through different things. It was super fun. This was a tricky one, and I think because the Peanut was going back to school, she was a little tired, so we did get a few hints on this one, which we don't normally have to do. It was a 3 out of 5, I think, for difficulty, so it wasn't particularly hard. But there were some tricky puzzles in there. There were some excellent moments. We actually split it over two nights because we got totally stuck and we didn't want to get another clue. And we came back and we discovered that there was an errata on that particular puzzle, which is why we were totally stuck. So we just moved on. Great fun. Those are by Inca and Marcus Brand, as always, published by Cosmos Games. I have a Calyx hole absolutely packed full of exit games because every time I go to PAX, they have a buy three, get one free. And I always top up because that's basically, you know, 19 or 20 bucks for an exit game. That's a fun night. We played some Bonanza Dahlias, got rinsed by the Peanut well and truly. She absolutely cleaned our clocks. She does not need any shepherding or help to play that game. She's a master negotiator now. And she just destroyed the Fox and I by, like 20 points or something. Bonanza Dahlias is great. Won't linger there. But from there, I had a really great day. Yesterday we had in the bunker Super Trooper, and it's the first time we had Project L and the Cracker with us. We met Project L and the Cracker at PlayCon last year, and Super Trooper, I think, met up with them at the Board Game Barbecue Game Day last year, also in November. And I've been meaning to host game day with everyone since PlayCon last year. Very poor form. We had a really good day. So the first game we played was a four-player game of Galactic Cruise. Now, Galactic Cruise has just recently fulfilled. Spoiler alert, you're going to hear about it during incoming, obviously, because Galactic Cruise got delivered to me last week. It was a delight to unbox. We'll get into that in incoming. But Galactic Cruise is a heavy Euro that feels Lacerda-esque. And I'll say Lacerda-esque in that it's got a lot of intermingled mechanisms. So rather than, you know, some of these big Euros, you've got five or six kind of mini games you're playing. We had five or six different bits of the board, like in Lacerda, and you have to kind of have a presence and a movement in each of them because you want to launch a ship. In order to launch a ship, you have to have ship parts, you have to have cabins for people to sit in, you have to have a cruise scheduled at the scheduling office, you have to have passengers in the queue that suit the kind of cruise that you want to play, you have to pay to advertise to entice people into the waiting room for your cruise, then you have to have fuel and oxygen and food for the cruise, and then you have to have someone to fly the ship and all that so you can launch the cruise. And while the cruise is in space, a myriad of different things happen, depending on whether it's in space or what kind of stop they make. Galactic Cruise sounds like a great big pot of a whole lot going on, and it is. But everything makes sense. I have to say, my first experience with Galactic Cruise was one of absolute delight in that I don't think there's anything in that game or board or mechanics that I would want to take away. You know, and I think Galactic Cruise, from a game designer point of view, I'm not a game designer, right? I'm from the outside looking in, but my thoughts are that it shows an incredible amount of restraint in that it would be very easy to have all these things going on and just get to the point where you're like, oh, I can't fucking launch a cruise, right? And now, Clappers, you know how much I love a Lacerda game. I absolutely do. But there are sometimes I'm playing a Lacerda game and I get to a point where I think I'm ready to do something and I'm absolutely not because I've missed a step. And then you've got to loop back and it's like two turns to repair that misstep before you're ready to actually do the thing, whatever the thing is. And I think that's in part because sometimes, and this is not Lacerda games are among my favorite games on the planet, but sometimes some of the actions that are in a Lacerda game are just one step abstracted a little bit too far. And I found that with Kanban. Some of the mechanics in Kanban were a little bit abstracted for my liking. Kanban's one that I didn't enjoy particularly. I know Kanban's a crowd favorite. I bounced off it personally. Lou loved Kanban. Kanban, up until last week, was my eldest daughter's favorite board game that she'd ever played. Kanban was her number one game that she'd ever touched. And so I get the appeal. And all this is to say that all of the mechanics that I had to engage with in Galactic Cruise, the ones that I've listed, they all made sense. And at no point in my turn did I ever feel like I'd painted myself into a corner and had to spend two turns to unpaint myself, to circle back to get what I needed. Because the steps to launch a cruise are absolutely transparent. They're very easy. It makes sense. I need passengers. I need to schedule a cruise. I need a ship. That ship needs to be built. That ship needs to be fueled. I need to have food and oxygen for the people on the cruise. They all make sense. And the iconography, this is another one done by the ubiquitous Ian O'Toole. Ian O'Toole's art is, if not among, it is my favorite board game art. And I think that he has absolutely knocked this one out of the park. Galactic Cruise has that kind of 1950s retro feel about it. I won't say Fallout, but it's kind of Fallout-esque. You know, you've got this beautiful washed out color palette, and you've got this really stunning iconography that once you get your head around the iconography, it's excellent. The iconography in Galactic Cruise is really excellent. And to say I enjoyed Galactic Cruise would be a gross understatement. I know everyone else at the table enjoyed Galactic Cruise. I don't know if they enjoyed it as much as I did. I could see with repeated plays Galactic Cruise easily being in my top 10 of all time. at some point, maybe. As I said, I've had one play, but I can't think of a single part of Galactic Cruise that I didn't enjoy. The production quality for Galactic Cruise is insane. It's Eagle Griffin level punch-outs. The upgraded components, which I did buy, because of course anything else in the bunker is unplayable, are great. I think if there's one criticism, it is that the money has a bit of an Ark Nova kind of feel about it. I think it has a very Spartan, very unmoney sort of look about it. The upgraded money is beautiful. It's, you know, you got silver and gold chits. They're credits. They're totally functional. I actually, you know, I've got some bog standard sci-fi money that I have that I think is nicer, that I bought from, I want to say it's Broken Token. The Broken Token sci-fi coins are spectacular. But look, it's a very minor quibble, and it's not really a quibble at all, because Galactic Cruise also comes with an 11 out of 10 insert. It looks and feels like Game Trays. Don't quote me on that, but it looks and feels like Game Trays, and it looks and feels like some of Game Trays' best work. With the small exception that the cardboard boxes that hold your ship parts and your blueprints are just maybe 5 millimeters or 3 millimeters too small, and you really have to shove them in. And I have damaged one of my blueprints, which I'll just get over, you know. But the advice from the designers is, it's okay, shove them in and the box will stretch. So I've taken their advice. Look, I can feel the box is a little bit bigger than it was, but I still have to really shove to get these things in there. Minor quibble, Galactic Cruise is the first effort by Kinson Key. Kinson Key is the name of the company that they have formed, and it's designed by T.K. King, Dennis Northcott, Colton Thompson, with art by Ian O'Toole. And this is their first game. And man, oh man, this is the first thing they've designed and put out as a team. And I think, even individually, I'm not, and again, don't quote me on this, but I don't believe any of them have published a game in their life previously. If they have, my apologies, gents. But this game, this is a home run. Galactic Cruise is spectacular. If you don't own Galactic Cruise, find someone that does. Get it on the table. If you like heavy Euros, this is fantastic. And we went straight from there, same group before. We played a four-player game of SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So the name of the game is Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. I know I have said that before. I played a two-player game with Lou a couple weeks back. Really enjoyed it. I had some hesitation about the scanning mechanic, which is the one that allows you to collect data from space, because at two, there's not enough presence in those spaces. And I think that at two, there needs to be an adjustment in that. And by that, I mean, we either need to remove some of the segments so that it's compressed into a lesser sort of field for scanning, or we should be seeding those segments with a third party that doesn't score, but just gives us sort of a pre-seeding that you have to beat in order to take an error majority. Because at two players, when you start scanning, you're swapping your tokens out for the blue data, which is out in sort of the near space. And when that space is entirely filled with player tokens, then you do an area majority. And at two players, you know, if you get a three token head start in there, the other player's not going to touch it. And so you're just left with trying to farm the same space over and over and over again. At four, it becomes a lot more push-pull. At four, that mechanic was fantastic. At four players, there's enough going on in space that there was a real tug of war. And we had to go to tiebreakers often for those spaces. And what's interesting is the tiebreaker is the last one in. So, for example, there was one of these spaces that had six slots in it. It was two of my tokens, two of the Cracker's tokens, and then two of Project L's tokens, I think. Could have that wrong. I think it was. And because Project L was last in, she won, even though it was 2-2-2. And we're left with two for the Cracker and two for me. And the tiebreaker for that is also who was last in. So even though I was first up into that space, I ended up being third. And third is the first loser in those area majorities. So there's a really interesting push-pull on that. And different wards and different benefits all around. We misplayed a couple of rules, mostly me, where I inadvertently cheated by taking benefits that I wasn't entitled to in one of these area majorities. But it was simple enough to unpick those things. You know, there were one or two moments where I think we just jumped the gun. I know I took a bonus. Anyway, there were SETI is a brilliant game. I think the wonderful thing about SETI is you've got these two alien species which are face down on the table, and certain things have to happen as a joint effort to flip those over and reveal them, and then they meaningfully change the way the game is played. They change the way you score points. They change the way you interact with the board. They change the board state, and not in meaningless ways. I love that SETI comes with five alien species, and you actually don't know which two you're playing with until they flip. You just randomly take two boards face down. I think everyone at the table enjoyed SETI. These were both long games. I want to say they were both at least 3 hours for four players. They were our first games. I think a second playthrough of Galactic Cruise would probably be less, but not a lot less. You know, I think it was a very smooth play of Galactic Cruise, and I think we might be able to knock a four-player game down to about 2.5 hours. But what was great about both of these games is neither one of them felt overly long. While there was downtime while you're waiting for your turn, both these games are very sandboxy, and so there's a lot to grok on the board, and you need that time to decide what you're going to do next. Now, Galactic Cruise is deeply strategic. There's no card draws. There's no random. There's no randomization. There's no new information that really sort of is involved in your decision space. So it's a much more deterministic game. SETI, you've got a hand of cards in SETI, and these are random, and there's card markets, and they're random, and the cards are an absolutely meaningful part of the game. Now, these cards are multi-use. There's 1, 2, 3, at least 4 ways you can use each card. So again, I never feel in SETI like I'm painted into a corner with my decision space, but it is very sandboxy in that way, in that, you know, if it's 6 minutes before my turn comes around to get at the table, I need that 6 minutes to look at my hand and look at the board and look at what's happening to make my decision. So I didn't feel like either of these games was overly long at the 3 hour mark, basically. And I thoroughly enjoyed both of them. I think SETI, if I were to play it two player again, I would immediately house rule that we'd drop two neutral tokens in each of the scanning spaces. I think it needs that to make those spaces worth pursuing. I think SETI absolutely needs that. Loved SETI. SETI at 4 was fantastic. I think SETI at 3 would be great. And as I've already said, I think SETI at 2 needs a little bit of adjustment. And that's SETI. That's the games that were. Boxes on the doorstep, new delights inside. Heaven's on fire, feels to divide. Here we are again for incoming, 4 exclamation marks, and whoa, it was a big 10 days for incoming. I know I've already spoiled the lead. Galactic Cruise landed on my doorstep, as did SETI. SETI was a pre-order that I'd placed 6 months ago, and I think pre-orders are already sold out in Australia because it went hard when it was pre-ordered. Hopefully be able to get it again soon. Galactic Cruise was a crowdfunded game, which I actually delivered exactly on time. Kinson Key said they'd be delivering in February. They delivered in February. I know there's some of you overseas who are still waiting for your game. All I can say, guys, it is worth the wait. So both of those delivered. I had another game I ordered, so I found a decent price on it. I ordered Imperium Horizons, which is part of the Imperium set by David Turksey and Nigel Buckle, and published by Osprey Games. The Imperium system is fantastic. I've yet to play it multiplayer, but from what I can tell in the game, other than fighting for the market, multiplayer is more like multiplayer solitaire anyway. I know Super Trooper's very excited to play Imperium. He's a history buff. I now own Imperium Classics and Imperium Horizons. I don't have Imperium Legends, but I will probably add that to the stable, because Imperium's the kind of game that I think has a lot to offer and a lot of longevity. And if I can get Super Trooper into Imperium, I think it's the kind of game that we will pull out 3 or 4 times a year, you know, till the end of time, really, because I think he'd love it. And playing it two-player, playing it three-player, whatever the case is, it's basically playing one player, but not. I know that Captain's Chair has just been released. It's not yet available in Australia, I don't believe, which is the new reskin on that, which allegedly, by some people's commentary, is a better game than Imperium. that is basically Star Trek Imperium. They've streamlined a few things, and I think, you know, while that sounds great, and I do love Star Trek, I think I'll just hold back and see. I like the, I won't say the messiness, because it's not messy, but Imperium is not a clean game in that the gameplay is smooth, but each, one of the things they've done so brilliantly is each civilization plays differently. It's the same gameplay, but getting to a win state changes based on which civilization you're playing. And I'm, you know, watch this space. I'm not saying Captain's Chair won't appear in my Kallax, because I do love Star Trek, but I will be sort of waiting to see on that one. So Imperium Horizons, it's here, it's been sleeved, it's ready to go, and it's on the shelf. And I also got the expansion for Gaia Project Lost Fleet delivered. Again, I pre-ordered that at least 6 months ago. Gaia Project was my OG first big uber meaty solo game that I bought. Now, don't get me wrong, Gaia Project is not a solo game, but the solo for Gaia Project is spectacular. So I have yet to play Gaia Project multiplayer, if I'm being honest, and I probably haven't pulled Gaia Project off the shelf in a year and a half. But I do adore Gaia Project. I think Gaia Project is a masterpiece of game. It's a re-theme, re-skin, redevelopment of Terra Mystica, which is a great big sprawling expanse of a civilization game, followed by Age of Innovation, which is the third major iteration, which is kind of like Terra Mystica 2.0. Gaia Project is spectacular. The Lost Fleet's sitting there. It's still in shrink. I haven't opened it up yet, but you can count on the fact that Gaia Project Lost Fleet will get to my table in the next month or so, because I love Gaia Project and it's been far too long. And I had another game deliver, which is a charming little, I don't go so far as to say it's an indie project, and that is Tabriz. Now, Tabriz was a crowdfunding project that I pledged for, I want to say at least 2 years ago. And unfortunately, the project got plagued with all kinds of challenges. They had issues with the shipper that they'd booked. I don't know the exact details, so I'm not going to pretend I do. But it was supposed to deliver, I think, from memory, December 2023. So it arrived 2 days ago. It arrived 2 days ago. And Tabriz is about weaving carpets in Persia. And it's clearly somebody's, whether it's the designer or somebody's got a real passion for Persia, because all of the components in the box come in Persian as well. You have a choice. It's English and Persian. I've popped it open. I've punched it and sleeved it and had a look. It's a very pretty looking game. I don't know how deep the gameplay is. It looks like maybe a 2 out of 5, a 2.2 out of 5. But it means it's the kind of thing, I'll get to the table with the fox, maybe Buttercup will play. It comes with a playmat as standard, and the playmat rolls up and fits in the box, which is really nice. The parts and components look great. The box is beautiful. The art's beautiful. And this is by Randy Flynn. Randy Flynn made his fame, I think, 3 or 4 years ago by making a game you may have heard of called Cascadia. And so I actually backed this because I love Cascadia, and I thought that it was a great piece of work. And as I've mentioned before, I like to use at least some of my crowdfunding dollars for the little guys. You know, I think that it's important. I'm not saying it's a good or bad game, Tabriz. I think it's had a bit of mixed review on release. I think it looks fun. I think it looks great. I think it looks interesting. It looks like, you know, maybe a 45-minute to an hour game, if I'm guessing. I don't know. We'll see. Watch this space. It looks fantastic. I'm glad it's here. I'm glad I backed it. And I look forward to more content from Randy Flynn. Now, I had another game arrive. It was in this last cycle, I've had 6 games arrive. So it was a huge period, 10 days for incoming. It was a bit of a dry spell the first bit of January, but I had 6 games arrive. Granted, one of them I had just, you know, ordered off Amazon. You know, Uncle Bezos had it on sale. Two were pre-orders. Two? Gaia Project, Imperium, no, SETI was pre-order. And this last one was also pre-order. So it was 3 pre-orders, 1 impulsive purchase, not so impulsive, and 2 crowdfunding projects. And the last one that's arrived is called Pax Hispanica. Now, I love anything pirate-themed. I love anything pirate themed. And you know, Ion Games is known for the PAX series, and the PAX series aren't everyone's cup of tea because they are very heavy historical games. And I don't think this one's any different. I think with the exception of PAX Premier, which I'm not convinced was an Ion production, maybe. Anyway, PAX Hispanica, it's pirates, it's very asymmetrical, and your pirates are, as they evolve and they're growing from, you know, a little lad on the docks to railing the high seas, pardon my vernacular, you change and grow into different sort of quadrants of character and personality. It's a very beige Euro-y Euro on the table. It comes with a cloth map, basically, for the seas. You're sailing in the Caribbean. The components look fine. I'm not going to say it's top shelf, but they look fine. This is by Phil Eklund, who has done, I think, at least a couple of the other PAX games. And I might get this wrong. I think he did PAX Renaissance and maybe PAX Illuminati. And when I watched a How to Play video by Phil Eklund, as much as he may be a brilliant games designer, he's not the most eloquent of games teachers. And that may be because when people say, well, board games aren't rocket science, this one might just be because Phil Eklund, allegedly, as it turns out, is a rocket scientist. So very smart man, making very smart games. I am very much looking forward to PAX Hispanica. It may be the kind of thing that I end up playing almost entirely solo. The solo allegedly is perfectly functional, but I love me some pirates. It's here, it's on the shelf. I pre-ordered that in January. I went and looked it up because it was a long time ago. I pre-ordered that in January 2023. And so it's again, I think it was meant to deliver at the end of 2023 or early 2024 originally, but it's here now, and I can't wait to play it. Anything pirates, that's incoming. Six games in the last cycle. Onward. So for FOMO Mofo, we're into FOMO Mofo. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunded games, but merely the ones that have caught my eye for one reason or another. I just like the pretty things, or they're by a designer I like, or an artist that I like, a developer I like, or they've got lots of toys, and sometimes all of the above. So without further ado, into FOMO Mofo for this week. I want to talk a little bit, and I won't talk much because the we're going to cover this in Voices in My Head in a lot more detail about the South Tigris expansion. So the South Tigris expansion is live. In fact, it's about to finish. I think it finishes in 3 days. This is an expansion for every South Tigris game. So that's Wayfarers, Scholars, and Inventors. And it also includes the Moon Saga trilogy. This is by Garfield Games. And, you know, it looks good. I won't say it looks amazing. I've tried to unpick what's actually included in these expansions, and I would normally just go, well, I love these games, boop, I'm gonna do it. I'm deep down the well of internal debate because it's $236 New Zealand dollars or nothing, right, for this package. Now you can unpick and you can go, well, I just want the expansion for Scholars, which I would love to have because Super Trooper and I think between our plays and my solo plays, I think I've just ticked over 10 plays of Scholars of South Tigris. Love Scholars of South Tigris. And I think I'm ready for another layer on there. I've only played Wayfarers 3 or maybe 4 times, and I've not played Inventors at all. And it's not that I am hesitant about buying expansions for games I haven't started yet, if it's from a designer I love and it's content I love. But that price ends up being $215 Australian dollars in one whack for a package of expansions. And I actually think it's reasonable. It is reasonable. You're talking about basically $54 per expansion, including shipping. And so $50 basically with delivery for an expansion. I'm okay with that. It's just the outlay all at once. That too, you know, Garfield doesn't do pledge managers. They do a campaign, and then the campaign's closed, and if you're in the campaign or you're not. So there's no pledge manager, and they exclusively use Kickstarter, at least historically they have, and they have again here. And so there's no stretch pay, which means you're putting $215 in their hands, and you just, that's it, which is fine. It's like, and I actually think that they're one of those companies that is, yes, all their games go to retail, but they are a small company. If you hop on their Facebook page, you can see their offices. It's a small office with four computers and a warehouse downstairs. And they're one of those companies that I like giving my money to. So where I'm at on this, I don't know. I really would like to have these expansions. But the good news is Garfield Games always goes to retail. I know I'll be able to pick them up. I will pay more for them, a little bit at least, because I'm not paying shipping in retail. I will be paying a little bit more for the privilege of picking them up retail. But it also does mean that I'll be able to pick them up in sort of phases. I'll be able to get the Scholars expansion, then the Wayfarers, Inventors, whatever, and then the Moon Saga trilogy. I will be paying more for it. Where I'm sitting right now is I will most likely get these at retail. Garfield also doesn't do a lot of big whiz-bang exclusives. It's, you know, they've said on a number of forums that they're not really comfortable doing that. They often offer a small pack of cards or a few more tokens as a exclusive, Kickstarter exclusive promo. And I don't dislike that either. You know, they're trying to make sure that no one misses out. They're not trying to do the hard sell and say, well, if you don't get it now, you're not going to get it. It's not really their thing. And I really respect that. Where I'm sitting right now is it's probably a retail purchase for me, even though it's going to cost me a little more. I have some big board game expenses coming in the near future, in the next sort of 3 to 4 months. And that includes things like shipping for Enormity is going to be $150 Australian. And if I want the sleeve set for that, it's going to be another, at least the same if I want to sleeve that. So whether, anyway. And I've got shipping for Revenant coming. I've got a few things coming anyway that are going to commit my crowdfunding dollars. I had originally pledged for it. I canceled my pledge. And who knows? By Tuesday, I may decide, well, screw it. I'm just gonna pledge for it anyway. It does look good. It does look very good. And that's the South Tigris expansion. The next one I'm going to talk about, Allplay has a trio of games up on crowdfunding. And it's what I love is they've got three games going to crowdfunding. This is a model that I've seen a few times recently. There were, you know, last year we had two of Reiner Knizia's games that went up together. And then he was part of another game that went up in packaging, for example. And so Allplay's got a trio of games up on crowdfunding. And they're very different. You've got Twinkle Twinkle, which is basically your plucking little clear acrylic star sets out of a bag, and they're gorgeous. And you're popping them in your tableau, and you're trying to set collect and build little patterns and whatnot. You've got Merchants of Andromeda, which I think from memory is a Dr. Knizia reskin. I might have that wrong, but it's got a Dutch auction in it, and I love a Dutch auction. And you can either manually do the Dutch auction, or there's a little app for it. And so for those of you that don't know what a Dutch auction looks like, it came about in the early 1900s in Holland. It's how they were able to auction off thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of tulips every morning at the tulip auction house. And what happens is these things go up in a lot, and the clock starts, at a dollar value, whatever it might be. Let's say these are pink tulips, or I don't know what the resources are, Merchants of Andromeda, I can't remember. And it starts at $16, and the clock starts winding down, and it winds down fast. It goes through a dollar every second, basically. So it's a clock that goes in reverse. It starts at a price and it goes backwards very quickly. We actually use the Dutch auction here in Sydney, Australia, in the fish market, because it is the most efficient way to auction tons and tons of things in a very quick manner. And so at the fish market, for example, you'll have a screen that shows the next 10 auctions that are coming up by lot number. You've walked around the floor and you've looked at the lots that you want to bid on as a fish distributor, and your lot comes up. And everyone's sitting down in the auction hall, perfectly silent. This whole thing happens in silence. And that clock runs backwards. You've punched in your code for your buyer number where you're sitting. And all you do is when you want the lot that's on the screen, you hit a button and it's yours. You can't be outbid because you are already the highest bidder. The clock is going backwards. So that tension between, well, do I wait? I'm going to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait, and then someone else is going to grab it. So what happens is the four of you, it's like the Schwazze app. If you haven't got the Schwazze app for choosing first players, you're going to put your phone in the middle of the table for the Dutch auction for Merchants of Andromeda. Everyone's going to put their finger on it, and the clock will start winding down, and the first person to remove their finger wins the auction. Okay, that is going to be a head game and a half, and I love the sound of that. I absolutely love the sound of that. I don't care what else is happening in the game. They've got a Dutch auction running the game, and I think that is going to be spectacular. And then the third one in the trio is called Waddle, and it involves putting little penguins out on the ice, and I don't know what else, but that's all I need to know. So I am all in on this one. If it delivers on time, it'll be before Christmas this year, and that will be Twinkle Twinkle for the Peanut. That will be Merchants of Andromeda for Hammers, and Waddle for the Fox, because she is a mad penguin fan, and none of them listen. They don't listen, so there's no spoilers for them here. So that is, I am all in on that one. It's very reasonable. I want to say it's $150 Australian for all three games, and it's $21 shipping basically. So yeah, I'm in on that one. The third one I want to talk about, this will be the last one I'm talking about before we touch on a few other pieces in FOMOFO, is Massive Darkness. Now, Massive Darkness has been around a long time. It's a dungeon crawler. They've got lots of expansions. They've got a huge following. This is the latest by Simon. And it looks really cool. I think it looks really cool. It's got lots of toys. The gameplay looks great. I've never played Massive Darkness. It doesn't matter if I've never played Massive Darkness. But look, it's Simon, which means it's got awesome minis. Cool mini or not, that's their whole jam. Massive Darkness is a game format that's been around for quite some time, and there's plenty of expansions and plenty of whatever. This is a standalone, so it's a new standalone version. One of the things they've done that's, I think, really clever is you can actually pick up 5th edition manuals for all of the, I believe, all the monsters, all the characters and everything. And so you've got the minis and you've got all the assets. And when you're not playing Massive Darkness, if you're a D&D player, you've got all these assets that you can port over and play 5th edition with, which I think is really smart. So they're not only tapping into the Massive Darkness fan base, but they're tapping into the 5th edition. And I don't think that, you know, because that's not announced, you can't see that unless you go to the campaign page and you scroll down. I think it's about a third or halfway down the campaign page. It goes, oh, by the way, we've got these great TTRPG manuals that you can port all this over to 5th edition. Now, I don't play 5th edition. I haven't played D&D in ages and ages. I would love to play role-playing games again. I just don't have a group for it. But I think it's a very smart move to diversify that particular IP. Unlike, I mean, most CMON crowdfunding stuff is in the $3, $4, $5 million range. They're a great big beast. I think this is currently sitting around $1 million. And I don't think that that's a failure by any stretch of the imagination, but I it's interesting to see them not do huge, huge numbers. I've got some notes here. I think it's the new core system and stretch goals is basically $225 Australian dollars. Look, that's about bog standard for any sort of whiz-bang CMON thing on crowdfunding. It's another $42 for shipping. That's only 18% as a shipping sort of differential. It's not too bad. CMON minis, I don't think I'm in on this, but I certainly spent a lot of time looking at it to make that decision because it looks like a cool, fun project if you like dungeon crawlers. I'm all in for Lands of Evershade. So that, for me, is going to tick this box. And Lands of Evershade is not so much a dungeon crawler, but it's more kind of like D&D without a you know, a DM. And I think that's going to tick the box for me there. So I did think about it a lot, but you know, FOMO. So we'll see. I don't think so. It could be a maybe. It's on GameFound, so Stretch Pay is available, which makes it very easy to pledge for this kind of thing because you can pay it over 6 months and all of a sudden that $260 is, you know, $40 a month, which is very easy to justify. So I think Lands of Evershade fills that void for me quite nichely. I don't know if that's a word, but it is now. But we'll see. There is so much out, right? Like, this is the reason I only cover the stuff I'm really interested in, because I can speak passionately about it at length because I love the looks of these things. But right now, there's a lot out in crowdfunding, and there's a lot coming. It is going to be a huge 2025 from the looks of it. Hold on to your wallets, guys. Get the defib paddles out because you're going to need to restart that mofo like every 6 weeks to just put some life back into it. Thank goodness for Stretch Pay because, as I said, it looks like it's going to be a bumper year. I think, you know, for board games and interesting board games. I think it's going to be an expensive year. I'm okay with that because, you know, money comes and goes. Time's gone forever, right? You can only spend time once. And I like spending my time doing stuff that's of value to me. From here on in, you know, episode to episode, guys, I'm going to try and focus not on what's coming, because there's so much coming. And I'm going to lose track of what I've talked about 10 times. I don't want to bore you to death with more talk of Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era, for example, which you've heard me mention 47 times. I'm going to really focus in FOMO Mofo on just what is live or about to be live, or what's in, you know, Pledge Manager, that's where we've got opportunities to actually get involved. Otherwise, we'll be here all bloody day. I will say, by way of update, I was very pleased to hear yesterday that Project L was backed the Puerto Rico Uber Deluxe version. I couldn't be happier. It saves me having to play the FOMO game while I wait for the Pledge Manager to close. I was very, very happy to hear that. She's taken out the exact pledge level that I would have, so high five. I also think that after having spent a day in the bunker, that she's gone home to plan to build her own bunker. So watch this space. We will have multiple bunkers in the game group, so maybe. That'll do it for FOMO Mofo this week. This week on Voices in My Head, it's expansions. I want to talk about expansions, and I will caveat this because there's a little bit of an overlap. The two gents that I follow and whose content I really enjoy run a podcast called So Very Wrong About Games. They also did an episode on expansions this week that is absolutely worth listening to, and their particular focus was when expansions, I think I might get this wrong, but bear with me, when expansions go bad kind of thing, or when expansions don't tick the box. So that's absolutely worth a listen. That's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about expansions basically as a subset of FOMO. And this has come about because of the pain and the torment. And I say pain and torment. I'm not dying of cancer. One of my dear friends is dying of cancer. Shout out to you, brother. I'll be there for coffee next weekend. Like, these are first world problems. But the pain and torment of looking at a set of expansions, and this came about from my experience with the South Tigris campaign this week, and really being on the fence and like so firmly on the fence that I needed lube, right? Like I was just one leg touching the ground on either side, wincing in pain. And because I really would love to have these expansions. And that's part of that. I'm not a completionist by any sense. You know, I've got Wingspan, and I didn't take the recent Asia Wingspan. Not because I don't think it'll be great, but because I've got plenty of Wingspan. You know, I've got Anachrony, I've got the big box, and there are bits missing from that. And I've got the big box because it means I've got everything in one box, including all the minis. But there are two expansions, at least, that I don't have. And that's because I think what I have is a complete set of expansions that open to me. So I'm not necessarily completionist when it comes to expansions. But there's a FOMO attached to not having expansions, I think, that is very different to, well, a FOMO attached to not having a game. Because once you've got the game, if it's a game you really, really enjoy, you can't help but want more of that I really, really enjoy. And so let's talk specifically about the Scholars set, rather than the South Tigris set, sorry. I would really love to get the Scholars of South Tigris expansion. Yep. Get it done. And I think that it may be that's where I land with that campaign, is in the first instance, I just take the Scholars expansion, because as I said, you know, 20 minutes ago, I'm at a point in my game life with that particular game where I'm ready for something more. And don't get me wrong, Scholars is a heavy game. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to this very sandboxy point salad-y stuff going on. But I think that, you know, and I know Super Troopers played that a lot as well. And I think we're definitely ready for another layer on there. And I don't think there's any issue with throwing another layer on Wayfarers. Wayfarers is, it's a lot lighter than Scholars. I think it's a lighter game. It's a completely different gameplay mechanic. But here's the thing. And this is where, go listen to So Very Wrong, because they'll touch on all the ins and outs of this. Sometimes an expansion isn't the right thing. you know, and let's talk about, and I'm not going to go down this well, because the you know, Mark Bigney and Michael Walker did a much better job than I ever will. But sometimes an expansion makes a game worse. So I'll use the prime example that Super Trooper owns Raw, one of his all-time favorite games. He's got the uber chunky version with the Raw token that you need two hands to lift up and thump down on the table like a judge's gavel. And they've recently done an expansion for that. And he's just gone, no, I don't. Raw is a perfect game for me. I don't need an expansion for this. And so I layer that now over with the South Tigris stuff. And I can say, I love Scholars. I absolutely love Scholars. Scholars of South Tigris, I think, is a wonderful game. I love the color interplay in it. It takes me back to primary school of blending colors for different actions. I really, really love Scholars. And, you know, throwing expansion on there, it's not going to make me not love Scholars. It's not. Like, if there's one little more mechanic, because the flip side is you throw an expansion on, you don't like it, you don't ever have to put it out again. And this is where I've come to with the South Tigris expansions is there's some videos out. You know, Meeple University, Stella and Tarrant have one about Wayfarers, for example. Another great channel you can follow. They've got great content. Stella's hilarious. But there's not enough meat in what I can see just now for me to make the decision that these expansions actually make the game better. The Moon Saga expansion basically provides a campaign that you can play across all three games. So basically you play Wayfarers, then you play Scholars, then you play Inventors, and there's carryover mechanics and a very small narrative that goes with it. However, if you want to play that solo, you have to have the expansions. Okay, because the solo version of the campaign is you play base Wayfarers, then you play Wayfarers with the expansion, then you play base Scholars, then you play Scholars with the expansion, then you play base Inventors, then you play Inventors with the expansion. And I think it's really clever. But I don't know enough. I've read the rule book, and I've had a look down. I've gone down the well of sort of investigating what's included with this stuff. And as much as I love these three Garfield games, and I love what Garfield Games stands for me, let me be clear, this is for me. I don't see $210 of value in those boxes. And that's because for $210, I could buy Agamonia. Right, and Agamonia is a campaign game, and I know they're apples and oranges. I get that, guys. But, you know, if you go back 6 or 7 episodes ago, we talked about the value proposition and how we as gamers look at the return on our dollar investment. And one of the ways I look at the return on my dollar investment is how much am I going to get out of it? So if I get an expansion for Scholars, for example, for $50, which is a perfectly reasonable thing because I buy mostly heavy euros, and there's no such thing as a heavy euro in Australia for $50 unless it's secondhand, right? Like you want a heavy euro, you'd be lucky to get it for less than $100. So $50 is perfectly reasonable. I don't know that I will get enough play out of that. I probably will, right? So when it goes to retail, the very first thing I'm going to do, if I don't back it and cave and get it all, which I might, I've still got 3 days of biting my nails and staring at it. The very first thing I'll do when it hits retail is I will go out and I will get the Scholars expansion, right? We'll layer that on. That will be the first thing we do, first thing I do. And if I love that, and by then, there'll be more gameplay, there'll be more videos, there'll be all kinds of stuff for Wayfarers and Inventors, I very likely will go chase down the other stuff. It's very likely. I don't have enough information right now for me to say dropping this $210 is going to give me as much enjoyment, as much joy. It's going to marry Marie Kondo me enough. Does it spark joy? Like something like an Agamonia will. Okay, because Agamonia, I think, as far as campaigns go, certainly playing solo, it's a triumph of game. And I think I picked that up post... I didn't back that one. I picked it up post-campaign in retail. I think it was $230. And Agamonia is going to give me a huge amount of joy. So that for me, you know, is the FOMO though of, well, what if this expansion makes Wayfarers a perfect game all of a sudden? Now, Wayfarers is a good game. I like Wayfarers and the South Tigers. What if this expansion makes it the perfect game? And that's where the FOMO layer comes on and go, well, Hammers, you can take a gamble and you can drop that cash now and you will know sooner. I mean, the answer is, to be honest, the answer is going to be the same whether I get it in Kickstarter or whether I get it in retail. The answer will be exactly the same. Doesn't it make it a better game? The answer will be what it is. And that FOMO is the, well, I can get it in Kickstarter, or I can wait. And the Kickstarter, I think, is meant to fund and maybe no, or deliver rather November this year. You know, it's going to be another 4 months till retail. And that's fine. I'm not short on games to play, right? But for me, this is the decision space. This is the FOMO attached to specifically expansions. Now, I can tell you, for example, I know mid-year this year, May or June, Mindclash is going to launch a campaign which will have an expansion for Voidfall. I don't care what they put in that campaign, I will be buying it. It doesn't matter. I suspect it will be new factions, a couple more tiles, and a second campaign, scenario book, because that's really all they need to do. I'm crossing my fingers for Space Pirates. I am wildly hopeful that Space Pirates enter, and it's a totally different faction, different style of play. You can play Space Pirates. Well, that'd be so amazing. But I don't care what they put in it. I really don't. They could go, it's a new rule book. I'll go, okay, I need that. It doesn't matter, right? Because I love Voidfall. And that's what we're talking about here, is when you love a game, like Gaia Project. Gaia Project, the Lost Fleet expansion, came out last year for pre-order. I didn't look at anything. I didn't want to look at the rule book. I didn't look at gameplay. I didn't look at the components. I didn't look at the box. I just went to Gameology's website and I went, yep, hook me up, brother, because I need more Gaia Project in my veins. And that's the double-edged sword of expansions. I don't know where you clappers sit on it. Some expansions for me, again, look, I'll talk about Stonemaier. They did an expansion for Apiary this last year in 2024. Apiary is a fun game. Apiary is fine. Apiary is, it's interesting. It's not in my top 20, but the Apiary expansion was just more Apiary. It was more faction mats, basically. It was a couple of errata bits. It was a couple more tokens that get rolled in. And I'm like, yeah, more Apiary. Why not? I knew it wasn't going to make the game better. It also doesn't make the game worse. Right, I know more Apiary isn't going to make Apiary worse. It gives you more choice, more variety, more longevity. It means instead of playing Apiary off and on for the next 6 years, it might be off and on for 10 years. Expansions? I love expansions. And more food for thought before we sort of move on from this is, you know, I guess the subset of the subset. And this is topical in our sort of game group. And that's reprints. You know, and I think I'll save reprints for another episode. But reprints have the same kind of thing. It's like, well, I have a game I love. And I'm not talking about when a reprint like Puerto Rico goes from, well, here's a little brown box, to here's a gargantuan box with all the plastic and all the bits and all the acrylics. I'm talking about a reprint which is like, well, it's kind of the same game, but we've kind of tweaked it a little bit. Or it's the same game, we've got new art. Or it's not the same game. You've got that whole decision space, that rabbit hole you've got to go down. And, you know, we'll probably save that for another day. But I know this is topical, as I said, in our game group, because Manhattan Project Energy Empire is getting a reprint in our group. That's Voldemort's favorite game, or one of his favorite games. And it's like, well, do I or don't I? Do I want the new version? Do I not want the new version? And we don't have a lot of information on that just yet. But I kind of bundle that in the same box as expansions, in that I have to know what I'm getting before I get involved. And all that's to just come full circle. And I don't want to shit on expansions, guys. I think expansions are a wonderful thing. I will close this with one small annoyance. And, you know, that's when... And it's, again, who cares? But it annoys me when a crowdfunding game is delivered and it's basically only just... I mean... And look, I'm not going to name names, because there's one out right now for a game that's being delivered, and it's literally been in people's hands for 3 months, and they're doing a reprint with an expansion, and it's a game that is literally only just delivering, and the game designer has basically said, well, this is the version that I wanted to do the first time, but I couldn't do it for whatever reason. And so everybody's just got their game. It's like, some people don't even have it yet. And there's a new crowdfunding campaign, which is live right now, which is basically, well, this is the version that I wanted to sell you the first time. And so you've got all these people that have got this game, like, well, I'm kind of enjoying this game, but now, is it even a game? Is it like 100% unplayable? First world problems. That's what we talk about here in One Man Clapping. We just get through the day one day at a time. So onward, I want to give the clap this week to a very special individual, somebody who I respect greatly. And this, yeah, I don't like to talk politics on OMC because it's just not a thing, right? I don't want to talk politics. I don't often talk about religion. I had a wonderful conversation with the inimitable Paul Grogan about the nature of atheism and its importance to self-reliance. And that was amazing. It was just a wonderful chat. But I don't often talk about politics. But this week, I want to give the clap to my man JT in Canada, who has made me never prouder to be a Canadian. And I know that he, in his 10-year tenure as Prime Minister, has alienated some people. And I know that he's a hot topic. And I know he's stepping down. And I know not everyone loves him. But the middle finger that he gave to the one and only Donald J. Trump over the tariffs, to stand up and say, "You mess with Canada, you're going to get the horns, buddy," just made me so proud, because Canada is not a big country. Certainly, it's not a big country next to the United States, but Canada is an important country. And, you know, I'm an Australian, but I can tell you right now, if I had had to rescind my Canadian citizenship to become an Australian, I would not have done so. Because there are so many things about being Canadian that are a part of my DNA. And I'm not just talking about my love for all things bacon and maple syrup. I'm talking about kindness. I'm talking about tolerance. I'm talking about approaching the world with a certain viewpoint. When he stood up and made his speech, it's the first time in 10 years that I've seen Justin Trudeau not be he's always affable. He's always amenable. He's always positive. But he stood there and he was pissed, and he had every right to be. And I'm not trying to rattle any cages, guys. If you're a Trump fan, that is your right, that is your choice. But to levy tariffs on your closest relationship that's gone on for over 100 years it deserved the response it got. And this one's for you, JT. I am a supporter. I am a fan. I am what you might call an Uber fan. And that concludes this week's therapy session. Thank you, OMC crew, for bearing the brunt of my cascading social inadequacies. I always feel more ready to face the day after we talk. You guys fucking rock. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. Email wonmanclapping@gmail.com. You can Instagram me on One Man Clapping. You can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram and leaving a review, whatever platform you choose, whatever. If it's a negative review, I can take it. I've heard worse. Thank you, as always, for your time. This episode has been brought to you by the smell of a new board game. Is there anything better than the whiff of new cards? To be honest, it's why I have my shelf of firsts, because every time I walk into the bunker, it smells like new cardboard. I'm 100% with you, Dana Banana. You know who you are. Gonna sign off here and go punch a new game with a half chub the whole time. Absolutely freaking glorious. Till next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And remember, you are loved. But you're also probably hated by that guy in that other department at work, because that one time you brought curry to work and microwaved it right before he had his break. He's literally never forgiven you. Life goes on. We've all been curry boy once in our life. Peace out, mofos. Smell.